pointed at anything you're not willing to destroy. But by God, if someone's trying to kill you, you kill them first. Understand? Elias nodded. Hey, Papa said, bending down to look into Elias's eyes. Understand.
I understand.
Good. We're going to get out of this. I promise. She turned back to Jerry. Okay, Snake Eater. Here's the plan.
Jerry bared his teeth as he pulled open engineering's main hatch, willing the door not to make a sound. The second pirate was still rummaging through the personnel cabins on Valiant's crew deck. He'd gotten lazy and left his rifle propped against the bulkhead just inside Petty Officer Torgerson's berth. After checking the positions of the remaining three guards, Popoff had led Jerry out of engineering, down the short corridor to the port side stairwell and onto the crew deck. Jerry could hear the pirate rummaging around inside one of the berths several cabins down. The hatches on the cabins nearest them were all hanging open, making it easy for them to clear as they advanced. Popoff slowed as she neared the final open hatch, pressing herself against the bulkhead next to it. She had her knife out again. The plan was to dispatch this pirate just like she'd done before, quickly and quietly. Jerry held the rifle ready, turned slightly so he could watch Popoff and the deck's entry hatch behind them. Slowly, he sidestepped toward Popoff as she rotated her knife to hold it in a reverse grip. Their eyes met, and she held up three fingers. Jerry nodded, and she counted down. At one, she flipped around the hatch and charged into the room. There was a grunt, then what sounded like an alien curse, followed by more grunting. Jerry stepped up to the door and froze. Popoff and the pirate were locked together, the alien's back pressed against the far bulkhead, hands wrapped around Popoff's, holding the knife away from his throat. Popoff drove a knee into the pirate's chest, but the alien twisted away from the blow, using Popoff's momentum against her, twisting her so her back was against the bulkhead. Popoff gritted her teeth and shoved against him. She managed to get a boot behind her and pushed off the bulkhead, sending them both staggering across the cabin. Jerry didn't hesitate. He stepped through the hatch and swung the butt of the rifle in a downward arc, catching the pirate by his ankles, knocking him off his feet. Pathfinder and alien landed with a crash. The pirate growled, twisting his body and heaving up with his hips, launching Popoff off, sending her falling back into the small bed against the cabin's side bulkhead. Jerry stepped forward as the pirate scrambled to his feet, swinging the rifle around again. The alien caught it mid-swing, sidestepping the blow and twisting the weapon free of Jerry's grasp, pulling him off balance. Jerry brought a boot up, stopping himself from slamming into the bulkhead, then twisted back, lunging for the alien. He wrapped an arm around the alien's throat and squeezed with everything he had. The pirate's hands clamped down on Jerry's, and the boy felt every muscle in the alien's body clench. Popoff appeared next to them, slamming fist after fist into the alien's face, each impact a dull thud, accompanied by a metallic jingle as the alien's earrings clanged together. Jerry held on. The alien's fingers dug into Jerry's skin, drawing blood that streamed down his arms. Jerry gritted his teeth against the pain, a part of him screaming at him not to let go, and he held on. Pain flared down both arms, and the alien thrashed. Nevertheless, he persisted. After several excruciating seconds, Jerry felt the alien's body slump and weight increase as the pirate's legs began to give out. He pressed his back against the bulkhead and slid to the ground, never loosening his grip. Jerry felt the alien take a final breath, then go completely limp, head canting over, ears drooping. Popoff squatted in front of him, putting a hand on his bleeding arm.
Hey, it's okay.
Jerry didn't let go. Part of him knew Popoff was telling the truth, but another part of him, a part driven by sheer rage and primal instinct, told him not to let go. If he let go, the alien would break free and kill them both. He met Popoff's eyes, her expression softening.
Really? She said. He's okay. He's gone. Let go.
Jerry looked down at the alien's lifeless head, its weight sagging against his arm. Blood pounded in his ears. He realized he'd been holding his breath, blowing it out in relieved gasps. He unclenched his fists, his fingers aching, and let the alien slide to the deck. Jerry pushed himself away, eyes locked on the alien. He'd killed Nethergard during the Battle of the Spirit, but never anything like this. This was a completely different experience. This was something personal.
You okay? Popoff asked. Jerry took a deep breath, trying to clear his mind, and met her eyes again.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Popoff nodded. Good. We still have work to do. Come on, there's two more left.
She helped him to his feet, then turned back to the cabin's hatch. Jerry brushed himself off, looking down again at the alien's corpse, wondering if his father had ever killed anything like that before. He shook the ache from his fingers and turned to follow Popoff. He'd have plenty of time to...
Crack!
Popoff gasped, stumbling back into the cabin, tripping over the alien's legs. She landed on the cabin's deck, a pained expression on her face, looking up at Jerry as if she was asking him what had happened, her hands pressed against her abdomen, bright red blood seeping between her fingers.
Oh, shit!
Jerry hissed, dropping to a knee, putting his hands over hers. Popoff grunted, shaking her head.
No!
Her words were hoarse and pained.
No, I'll be okay!
Footsteps echoed in the corridor. Jerry spun, bringing his pistol up just as one of the pirates came into view. He screamed and squeezed the trigger. The pistol bucked hard, but he heard nothing, barely saw the alien jerk back, falling into the bulkhead. Blood pounded in Jerry's ears as he got to his feet, keeping the pistol trained on the alien as he slid down to the deck. The pirate locked his hate-filled eyes on Jerry's, growling through clenched teeth. His hand reached for something on his hip.
No!
Jerry shouted, pulling the trigger three times. The Pendiki shuddered with each impact, his arms falling to his side, his head dropping forward. He took several ragged breaths, then lay still, blood pooling beneath him. Jerry held the pistol on the pirate for several long moments, trying to comprehend what had just happened. He couldn't remember thinking about firing, couldn't even remember pulling the trigger or hearing the blast, but the alien was dead all the same.
Popoff!
Jerry said, remembering the wounded Pathfinder behind him. Popoff sat on the floor, propped against the bed, rifle lying across her lap. The color had started to drain from her face. Her hair was soaked through with sweat and matted to her face. Blood had soaked the front of her suit.
You okay?
I'm okay, she said, voice weak.
I'm gonna finish this.
Jerry stepped out into Valiant's Bay and came face to face with another alien pirate. The alien curled its lip up in a sneer, beady eyes narrowing. Jerry brought the pistol up, hoping to get a shot off before the pirate realized what was happening. With a growl of anger, the pirate knocked the pistol away with the back of his hand, sending it twirling into the cargo bay. It bounced and slid across the deck before glancing off one of the rover's back tires. The pirate lunged, light flashing off a twisted blade in his hand. Jerry stepped forward, bringing his hands up, blocking the sidearm thrust. He spun to the side, grabbing the alien's arm and using his momentum against him, pulling the pirate off balance. The pirate bounced off the railing, crying out as Jerry let go, flinging him back along the walkway. Frantically, Jerry looked around for something, anything to use as a weapon. Nothing. The pirate regained his footing and charged, knife held out in front of him like a spear. Jerry backpedaled, hand sliding across the rail for guidance. There wasn't anywhere to go except... The pirate roared as it closed on Jerry, bringing the knife back, preparing to ram it into the boy's chest. Jerry clamped his fingers around the rail, halting his backward progress, then pulled himself forward again. He kicked off the deck, launching himself into the air, driving a booted foot into the alien's chest. The impact sent the pirate stumbling back as Jerry continued through the air, over the rail, and down onto Valiant's cargo deck. A metallic clang echoed through the bay when he landed, the impact jarring his bones. He'd landed near some of the Pathfinder supply crates, most of which had been rummaged through and were scattered haphazardly across the deck. Jerry saw the rover 10 meters away, his eyes drawn to the pistol lying on the deck to one side. He took off at a sprint, knowing his only hope was to reach that pistol before the pirate reached him. The pirate landed awkwardly behind him, knocking over several crates and bellowing out angry curses Jerry didn't understand. More crates tumbled across the deck as the alien got to his feet, footsteps echoing behind him as he gave chase.
I'm gonna make it, Jerry told himself as he closed on the pistol. I have to make it!
He could dive for the weapon, grab it, turn, and fire before the alien got to him. He'd empty the magazine, he would... The alien crashed into Jerry's back, sending the teen tumbling forward. The impact knocked Jerry off course, sending him away from the pistol. Jerry landed face first on the deck, the alien falling on top of him, knocking the air from his lungs. Jerry grunted, feeling the alien move behind him. Panic flashed in his mind. He needed to get off his cheek. He thrust his rear up, bringing his knees to his chest, then pushing up. The move launched the alien over Jerry's head, flipping him through the air. The pirate crashed into another row of supply crates, scattering the stack across the deck. Jerry caught one of the smaller plastic cases, about the size of a shoebox, and raised it high as he pushed himself to his feet. He ignored the pain in his lungs, forgot the pain throbbing up and down his arms, and pushed aside his exhaustion. If he didn't stop this now, he would lose. He knew it. He would lose, and he would fail every human on this mission. Jerry Hale would not fail. With a roar, Jerry fell on the pirate as he struggled to climb out of the mess of crates and slammed the case into his face. It hit with a wet crunch, and Jerry felt bones snap. The alien's body jerked in shock and fell back, knocking several more crates aside. Jerry didn't stop. As he cocked back for another blow, he drove his knee into the pirate's chest, pinning him to the deck. He brought the case down again, rage driving it hard into the alien's face. Jerry's face contorted with anger and fear and fury as he slammed the case down a third time, and a fourth, and a fifth. He screamed as alien blood splattered, spraying up every time Jerry pulled the case away. He rammed it down again and again and again. He hammered it down until his arm hurt and his voice was raw from yelling. Finally, his fingers let go of the crate, letting it fall to the deck. It splashed in a growing pool of blood, spraying droplets all over. He sat back on the balls of his feet, breath coming in hurried, ragged gasps. Blood covered his hands. He felt warmth on his face, alien blood running down his skin. He was covered in it. The pirate lay still on the deck, his face a broken mess of gore. Blood gurgled from his mouth and eyes and countless cuts on his face. One of the alien's fingers twitched, a dying spasm, nothing to be afraid of. Jerry took one last look at the alien, then pushed himself to his feet. He felt like he'd been hit by a truck. He leaned back against one of the rover's oversized tires, steadying himself. He found the pistol, tucked it into his waistband, and headed for the bridge. He still had work to do. Another explosion ripped through something in the distance. Carson ducked as she stepped out into the alley. Several fighters flew past in the night sky above, cannons spitting out streams of energy at unseen enemies. A sporadic thumping of impact tremors echoed in all directions. Several blocks away, an explosion ripped apart a high-rise office building. Large pieces of twisted steel beams, thousands of shards of glass, and flame rained down on the streets below. A deep groaning noise rolled down the street as the top section began to lean over. Support beams snapped and concrete crumbled as the tower collapsed, finally breaking free of the bottom half and slamming into the street below. A massive cloud of dust and debris sprayed into the air in all directions, moving down the street like a charging hurricane. Aliens of all shapes, sizes, and colors fled through the streets, some carrying armloads of belongings, others simply running for their lives. Drop pods slammed into buildings, the street and crowds indiscriminately, disgorging squads of Netherguard that immediately began cutting down any survivors in their wake.
Keith!
Nunez called, stepping around her, motioning to an open parking garage across the alley. The slate-gray door had been rolled up, the frightened Zeiss prisoners huddled near the back behind a six-wheeled ground car and three air bikes. Moretti and Birch were helping Jenna to calm the freed prisoners.
On me!
Carson said, stepping inside the garage. She held up the pad.
We've got a possible location on the Valiant. Only problem is it's halfway across the city, and we're gonna have a hell of a time getting there with all this going on.
She motioned to the sky with a finger. Another explosion sounded in the distance, followed by screams of pain and gunfire.
We can take these,
Moretti offered, patting the front fairing on one of the air bikes.
Controls look basic enough, and it'd be safer than using anything on the ground.
He swung a leg over the bike, settling onto the padded seat. The small craft had sleek lines, silver and orange painted side fairings, and a clear windshield. Each bike was set up to carry two.
I don't like the idea of using unfamiliar equipment, especially when we're in a hurry and there's an invasion going on.
She turned to the Zeiss. Do you have any idea who might be attacking?
They are Ultari, Jenna said, holding out her pad. We've been getting updates from Din Central ever since the attack began, but they've never made an attack like this before, never against a Regulos outpost this size.
Carson took the pad, her blood running cold as she watched the video on the screen. The video was shaking and unfocused, but the image was unmistakable.
Netherguard,
she said through clenched teeth, watching one of the creatures climb out of a drop pod.
Shit,
Nunez said, walking to the front of the garage, checking the alley.
What'd they do? Follow us here?
Carson shook her head.
Doesn't matter. Right now we need to get our ship back and find our people. Janet, do you have a ship?
The woman nodded.
It's hidden at our compound 6 blocks from here.
Okay, take your people to safety. We'll...
No,
Jenna said, interrupting Carson.
Excuse me?
I'm going with you to find a Bindu.
Listen, I understand...
It's not up for discussion. I've been searching for him a long time. He took something that belongs to me, and I mean to have it back.
the Zeiss said. The whine of an engine spinning up filled the garage, and the bike Moretti was on lifted off the ground. He grinned, balancing the bike under him, one booted toe on the ground. He thrummed the throttle, revving the engine. Carson knew she was out of options.
Son of a bitch.
A flight of fighters screamed past overhead, cannons blazing energy bolts chewing through a cluster of Voltari drop pods, but even as six exploded, 20 more appeared to replace them in wave after wave.
We don't have much time, Birch said.
Can your people make it back to your ship? Carson asked Jenna.
Kin will get them to safety,
Jenna said, putting a hand on the only Zeiss male in the group.
We have a ship ready to leave,
Kin said. Moretti worked the controls, turning the bike, testing the accelerator.
Oh, yeah, this is nice.
Carson turned to Nunez. I really hope you know how to fly one of these. Nunez laughed, waving a dismissive hand through the air.
Oh, yeah,
he said, holding out his rifle for Carson.
Piece of cake.
He slid one leg over and adjusted himself on the seat. Moretti pointed to the starter, and Nunez pushed it without hesitation. The engine whined, spinning up. It lifted off the ground slightly, and Nunez laughed, adjusting his position on the seat. West climbed onto the last bike and held it steady as Jenna got on behind him.
Throttle, brake, Moretti said, pointing.
Got it.
Nunez thumbed the throttle, and the bike lurched forward. Carson had to jump out of the way to keep from getting run over.
Damn it, Nunez!
Carson shouted, slapping the front of the bike.
She's a little touchy.
Another explosion echoed in the distance.
They're getting closer, West said.
Carson climbed on behind Nunez, wrapping her arms around his waist.
If you kill us, Nunez, I will haunt you till the end of time.
Moretti walked his bike into the alley. The engine revved, and the bike lifted into the air slightly, then drifted back down, hovering about a foot off the ground.
Ready.
Carson's IR chimed. Her eyes widened as she saw who was calling.
It's the Valiant.
Chief Carson, it's Jerry Hale,
Jerry said, leaning forward in Valiant's pilot seat, adjusting the headset over his ears.
Jerry,
Carson asked.
What happened? Where are you?
Jerry tried to rub some of the blood from around his mouth.
I don't know, some big, mouse-eared-looking guys hijacked the ship, took the crew hostage. They missed us. I think we have the ship secure now, but I don't have any idea where we are, and Popoff's hurt pretty bad.
What's wrong with her? Who's us?
Me and Elias. Popoff got shot while we were taking back the ship. We patched her up the best we could, but she's not looking too good.
Jerry looked down at the wounded Pathfinder, slumped over in the co-pilot's chair to his right.
We need to get her some help.
Okay,
Carson said.
Try to stay calm. We're on our way to you. Do you have access to the ship's systems?
Elias nodded.
Yes,
Jerry said.
Find the emergency beacon protocols in the ship's security systems and activate it. We think we have a good idea of where you are, but it doesn't hurt to be sure.
Elias went to work on the terminal, fingers dancing over the keys.
Do you know where the rest of the crew is?
Carson asked.
No,
Jerry said, shaking his head.
They took them off the ship as soon as we landed. We haven't seen them since. Okay, that's priority number one. We need to patch into the building systems and try to locate our people. How do we do that?
I've got a local tech expert co-located with me. She says there's a direct interface to the building's computer core near the landing pad. You need to bridge a data link from the Valiant to me and she'll hack in. The bridge is in one of our supply crates in the bay,
Carson said.
It's marked tactical communication equipment. Go see if you can find it.
Go,
Elias said to his brother.
I got the bridge.
He adjusted the mic near his mouth.
Say, Chief, how are we going to tap the aliens' computers? These Mickey-looking aliens don't strike me as technological peers with the Altari.
My tech expert says the whole galaxy runs off of Altari computer code. We integrated with it for the engines. Should work.
Should work, she says.
Elias shrugged. The smell of blood was thick in Valiant's cargo bay. Jerry sorted through several crates, trying hard to ignore the destroyed alien corpse. He finally found it and opened the lid. He found the small hard plastic case marked DIB.
Okay,
Jerry said, popping the locking clamps open.
I found it. Now what? All you have to do is find a system interface panel and hardwire in.
A loud bang echoed through Valiant's bay. Jerry jumped, almost dropping the device.
Oh, shit.
What's wrong?
Carson asked. Elias's voice came over the ship's IR.
I think they're trying to force their way inside. We don't have a lot of time,
Jerry said.
Is there another way off this ship? The cargo ramp isn't an option. There should be a small access hatch at the nose of the ship,
Carson said.
Should be just big enough for you to fit through. You'll have to use the ship's maintenance corridors to get there. To get to those, you...
I know where they are, Jerry said, interrupting her.
Okay, we're heading your way. Get that patch installed and find the crew. We're about 15 minutes out.
Roger that, Chief,
Jerry said, feeling like a true pathfinder.
Carson out.
Several more vibrating bangs echoed through Valiant's hull as Jerry found his way to the access panel at the far end of the central tunnel. The hatch was at the bottom of a short tube extending down to the underside of the ship. Elias opened the hatch from the bridge and Jerry climbed down the ladder, stopping just inside the opening. He adjusted the small toolkit he'd found and keyed his throat mic.
Are they all still near the ramp?
Yes, most of them. A couple are standing out under the starboard wing,
Elias answered.
They're getting pretty pissed off, I think.
No kidding.
I think I found where you can patch in, though.
Finally, Jerry thought, some good news.
There are several junction access boxes on the east side of the roof, off to our port side, about 20 meters away. You should be able to patch the bridge there.
Great. How do I get there without getting shot at?
I think... Yeah, I can vent some exhaust from the engines and give you a little bit of cover. Won't be much, but it's something.
Better than nothing, Jerry said. He took a deep breath. I'm going left out of the hatch, yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
Jerry froze.
Right. Not left?
No, sorry, left. Left is correct.
Jerry shook his head.
Okay. I'm ready when you are.
Go.
Jerry heard the hiss as super-hot steam blasted out of Valiant's exhaust ports on either side of the ship, creating two large clouds of vapor. He dropped to the roof and ran to his left, keeping low, praying the ship's exhaust would shield his movements long enough to get to cover. The building's power junction boxes were gray metal, clustered together near two large cooling fans, which thrummed with power. Jerry ducked behind the first box just as the venting stopped. Carefully, he peered around the side and saw the pirates moving away from the dissipating clouds of exhaust, cursing and shouting at the ship. None appeared to have noticed him.
Okay, I'm here, Jerry said.
He went to work on the access panel covering the junction box and a few seconds later had it off. Inside, he found clusters of circuits and wires, none of which made any sense to him at all. He keyed his throat mic.
How the hell am I supposed to know where to plug this damn thing in at?
It doesn't matter, Elias said. Just attach it. The bridge should do all the work.
Jerry pulled the small electronic device out of the case. It was slightly larger than his palm. One side was smooth, black plastic. The other was covered in small pins with two clamps on two sides. He pressed it against the largest circuit board until it clamped down, securing itself to the electronics. Several lights appeared on the back side, blinking red and green. Jerry looked up as one of the aliens near the Valiant's ramp started screaming. He pushed one of the other pirates, pointing to the ship and shouting words that Jerry couldn't understand. The underling cringed and backed away, hands up in supplication. Two more big-eared aliens ran up to the group, carrying a large case between them. They set it down in front of the leader and opened the lid. The leader laughed, producing a large cylindrical tool. He flicked a switch and a blue flame erupted from the tip.
Plasma torch, Jerry thought. They're gonna cut through the hull.
He keyed his throat mic.
Are you getting anything?
No, I... Wait, yes, I have something,
Elias said.
Yes, we're in! Nice work!
Great. Can you vent more exhaust? I'm ready to come back in.
Hold on. Yeah. You ready?
Jerry got to his feet, bending his knees slightly, ready to run.
Ready.
Go!
Exhaust blasted from the vents, and Jerry launched himself forward. He'd only made it about three steps before the venting cut short. Shouts rang out as the exhaust dissipated. Three aliens in the main group pointed at Jerry as he crossed the halfway mark. Gunshots rang out. Jerry ducked and heard several bullets zip past him. He pushed harder, reaching the access tunnel and jumping for the rungs. Bullets ricocheted off the ship's hull and ground underneath him as he pulled his feet inside. Jerry pulled himself up the ladder and rolled into the tunnel above.
Close it! Shut the hatch!
He shouted.
Chapter 26.
This was a terrible idea,
Carson thought, focusing on not vomiting all over Nunez's back. She squeezed him tighter as another wave of nausea hit her.
You doing all right back there, Chief?
Nunez asked, looking back over his shoulder.
I'm fine. Just get us there and hurry.
I'm giving her hell, Chief. It's all she's got.
Even with the wind whipping around them like a hurricane, Carson could hear the sounds of battle below. Gunfire and explosions echoed through the air from every part of the city. Another drop pod erupted into flame off to their left as the Dysore anti-aircraft guns tore through it. Bright bolts of energy filled the night sky around them, taking out drop pods every few minutes. But the defenses weren't enough. The Netherguard assault continued unabated as hundreds of the cylindrical containers plummeted from orbit, ferrying squads of foot soldiers to the city below. Fires billowed up from destroyed buildings, and smoke rose into the air from a thousand fires littered throughout the city. Platoons of combat droids engaged the Netherguard in every section of the city, but with a seemingly endless supply of enemy soldiers, Carson wasn't sure if they'd succeed in repelling the invaders. After experiencing how the local intelligence node operated, and knowing how aggressive and powerful the Netherguard were, she doubted it.
"There it is,"
Moretti said over the IR. Carson looked over Nunez's shoulder and saw a 100-story skyscraper rising out of the city ahead of them. Interior lights created a mosaic of pale orange, yellow, and white lights up and down the entire height of the building. It looked relatively untouched by the Altari attack, but Carson knew that probably wouldn't last long. Carson keyed her IR link to the Valiant.
"Hello?"
Elias said.
"Any luck on that patch, Elias? Jerry's outside right now trying to get the link connected. I'm a little worried. The pirates were banging on the cargo ramp a few minutes ago, but they've stopped now."
"We're almost there. Is the ship locked up?"
"As far as I can tell, all the hatches are shut and locked."
"Good," Carson said. "Keep it that way. How's Popoff?"
"Her breathing slowed. I don't think..."
"Just hold on, Elias. We're coming. Let me know as soon as you get that connection patched in."
"Okay."
"Carson out."
"What do you think?" Nunez asked. Landing platform stretched out from the side of the building every 30 or 40 levels. She could just see the Valiant, sitting on a wide landing pad on the building's roof. She could see faint outlines of figures surrounding the ship, but couldn't tell if any of them were Abindu or not.
"There's no way of telling how many people Abindu's got guarding the ship or the prisoners. If we attack the ones guarding the roof, they'd be able to warn the ones guarding the prisoners."
"We can take the ship,"
Birch said.
"Yes," Moretti said. "If Popoff's as bad as those boys say she is, I need to get to her sooner than later."
"I don't like the idea of splitting up," Carson said.
"It's not a great play," Birch admitted, "but I don't think we have a lot of choice."
Carson's IR chimed. It was Elias.
"Go ahead, Elias."
"We're connected,"
Elias said. "I'm searching for the crew now. Looks like there's a lot of extra security somewhere between the landing pad on the 80th level and the roof. They've got some video feeds running back to the mainframe. Checking them now."
He paused briefly.
"Yeah, 89.
Carson tapped Nunez on the shoulder.
"Platform on the 80th level. Put us down."
"Got it." Nunez worked the controls and Carson felt the bike dip. Her stomach turned around.
"And Chief Carson?"
Elias said.
"But hurry. Popoff looks real bad."
"Understood," Carson said. "Moretti, Birch, you have the Valiant. Wait until I give the signal before you attack."
"Roger that,"
Moretti said, gunning the bike shooting up through the air. Nunez maneuvered his air bike around the edge of the building, coming up on the side of the platform. He flared the air bike briefly as he crossed the threshold, bringing them to a crawl. Carson jumped off the bike before Nunez came to a complete stop. The view out to the city was breathtaking, even amidst the fierce battle filling the sky above. A drop pod crashed into a building several blocks away, exploding in a brilliant fireball, sending chunks of building raining down. West and Jenna sat down as Nunez stepped up beside her. West waited for the Zeiss to climb off, then followed.
"We're gonna need to move fast," Carson said.
She checked the magazine count in her Gauss carbine's optics, then let it hang from its sling around her shoulder. She drew her pistol, flipped it around to hold it by the barrel, then held it out for Jenna.
"Your friend said he knew how to handle guns. I assume you do as well?"
Jenna took the weapon, inspected it for a second, then ejected the magazine, racked the slide, and snatched the ejected cartridge out of the air as it spun out of the chamber. Without hesitation, she slid the bullet back into the chamber, sent the slide forward again, and slapped the magazine back into the pistol's grip. She brought it up in both hands, checking the sights, then lowered it to her chest and nodded.
"I'm familiar."
Carson couldn't help but grin.
"I see. Here's a couple extra magazines."
Carson led her team to the building's entrance, double glass doors set into a wall of windows that wrapped around the building. Inside, there was a small atrium with four banks of elevators at the far end. Nunez pulled on the door, locked.
"I think I can pick this," Nunez said, kneeling down in front of the door's panel.
Elias, Carson said, keying her IR.
Yes?
Can you unlock some doors for us? Platform access, 80th floor?
Just a second.
The door clicked. Nunez grunted and pulled it open, nodding his approval.
Nice work, Carson said. Stand by, we may need some more help.
Okay.
They filed into a small lobby, footsteps muted by the carpeted floor. A small end table next to an uncomfortable-looking chair was the only furniture. A door to their right was marked with words that Carson couldn't read, but the small image told her everything she needed to know. Stairs.
Nunez.
Carson nodded to the stairwell entrance.
Roger.
He paused briefly at the door, then slowly pulled it open. West moved in, his pistol up, sweeping the interior. He moved to the base of the stairs, leading up, and paused, scanning the landing above.
Clear.
Move, Carson said.
Jenna, follow Nunez. I'll cover the rear.
West led their group up, carefully clearing each landing as they ascended the stairs. He stopped at the landing between the 80th and 81st levels, weapon trained on the exit door above. Carson keyed her IR.
Birch, Moretti, we're in position. What's your status?
Birch answered.
We're hovering about 200 feet above the Valiant. Looks like Abindu's men are trying to cut through the rear cargo hatch. I don't see any sign of the little bastard with him, though my guess is he's still in the building somewhere. I count 6 hostiles up here. Shouldn't be an issue. Wait. Shit. They're bringing in a plasma ram. Chief, we need to move now.
Shit,
Carson said. Elias's panicked voice came over her comms.
Chief, chief, I think they're gonna get through!
In the background, Carson heard a loud metallic thunk and Elias screamed.
We're coming, Elias! Stay where you are!
West glanced over his shoulder at the chief.
We go?
Go!
West stepped forward, starting up the stairs to the final landing. When he was halfway up, the door on the landing above opened. A Pendiki pirate stepped into the stairwell, dressed all in black, rifle held across his chest, muzzled down. A matte black helmet covered the alien's head. 2 round domes, obviously covering his ears, gave the alien an almost comical look. His eyes swept down, immediately growing wide with shock. He opened his mouth to raise the alarm, body twisting to bring his rifle to bear. Without a word, West fired. His pistol barked twice, and 2 10mm rounds slammed into the Pendiki's chest. He cried out in surprise as his body jerked at the impact. He stumbled back in the corridor, dropping his rifle.
Move!
Carson said, charging up. West shouldered the door aside and stepped into the corridor. Carson practically shoved Nunez through as 2 more gunshots echoed down the long corridor. 2 more rounds from West's pistol caught the alien in the back, sending him sprawling forward, landing face down on the floor.
Nice shot!
Nunez started but was cut off by 3 rapid-fire shots going off directly behind them. All 3 Pathfinders turned to see Jenna standing, pistol extended, smoke curling up from the barrel. 10 feet away, another pirate was sliding down the wall, his blood smearing a trail through the tan paint.
Which way?
West asked. Carson shook her head.
We need to...
Shouts came from where the first dead pirate lay. A door opened and another pirate stepped out firing. His shots were wild, punching through the wall just in front of the Pathfinders. Nunez dropped the alien with a single burst from his Gauss carbine.
That way, move!
Carson shouted. West and Nunez split, moving up opposite sides of the corridor. Carson and Jenna followed West, keeping a few feet separation so they wouldn't get bogged down should they have to change directions or move unexpectedly. Gunshots rang out, and the right side of the wall ahead exploded, spraying the corridor with plaster and dust. The volley ceased, and someone shouted,
"Don't come any closer or we'll kill the hostages!"
Nunez took a knee. "Frag and clear?" Carson shook her head.
"Not with the hostages in there. Do we have any dazzlers?"
"I've got one," West said. "We can use it, but in those tight conditions I'd worry about blinding our people."
"It's better than being dead,"
Carson said. West nodded.
"Stay back!"
The Pendiki yelled, voice cracking, punctuating his words with gunfire.
We killed them all!
Damn,
Carson said, pressing herself into the wall.
Do we negotiate?
Nunez asked. Carson shook her head.
We don't have time for that. We're gonna have to go in fast and strong.
They stacked up and moved down the corridor, hugging the right side, Carson in the lead. She stopped 2 meters away from the damaged wall. Sparks shot out from fist-sized holes in the plaster, the interior flashing with every shower. A cloud of white dust filled the corridor, tiny particles floating down through the air. She could hear movement inside and one of the guards telling the hostages to stay quiet. Carson glanced back over her shoulder and held her hand out for West's dazzler. She pulled the safety pin, keeping her thumb off the trigger button, and mouthed her countdown. At 1, she jammed the button down, activating the grenade, then shoved it through one of the holes in the wall. The guards shouted, footsteps pounding as they ran for cover. One of the guards opened fire, bullets tearing through the wall, filling the corridor with more debris and dust into the air. A second later, the dazzler went off. Beams of light shot out through the holes in the wall, light refracting through the dust and bouncing off twirling particles in the air. The air pulsed as the device blasted the room with an ear-splitting boom. Carson stepped back and slammed a boot into the door. The lock snapped and the door swung back, bouncing off the wall behind it. She charged in, stepping to her left, eyes scanning the room. Valiant's 7 crew members were arranged in a small cluster near the back of the room, in front of a wall of windows looking down over the city. They sat cross-legged, hands tied behind their backs, a few lying on their side trying to bury their heads in the carpet, shielding themselves from the effects of the dazzler. Carson picked out Greer near the back of the group, already picking herself back up. Carson's first target was doubled over behind an upended table, hands covering both oversized ears. 2 shots sent him reeling back, tripping over a lamp. He landed on his back, hands struggling to bring his rifle up. Carson fired again, the round slamming into his forehead, snapping it back. The guard's head bounced off the floor, then he went limp. The guard who'd been standing beside him looked up at the shots, then watched, frozen in terror, as Carson dropped him. He screamed guttural alien words, eyes locking on Carson as he brought his rifle up. Carson dropped and rolled to the left as he fired, the shot going wide, slamming into the front wall of the room. She came up on one knee, found her target, and fired, the pistol jerking twice in her hands. The rounds took the guard in the waist. He spun away, screaming in pain, dropping his rifle as his legs tripped over an overturned chair behind him. Wood shattered as he landed. His back hit the edge of the seat and snapped back in a blood-curdling crack. His scream died on his lips, and his corpse hung there, balanced awkwardly on the broken chair. To her right, Nunez stepped through the door, moving to the far wall, searching for a shot on the guard by Valiant's crew. The Pendiki had stepped back toward the middle of the group, shouting alien commands as his 2 friends were shot down. He fired from the hip, sweeping his rifle back and forth, apparently unsure which pathfinder he wanted to target first. Bullets tore through the carpet to Carson's right, then stitched across the room toward Nunez. Carson dove behind a lounge chair as bits of carpet and flooring sprayed into the air. Nunez dove for a small wooden dresser, but landed short, rolling to his knees inches away from cover. Lying on her side, behind the chair, Carson saw Greer move, the pilot pushing herself to her knees, then getting her feet under her.
"Rachel, no!"
Carson yelled, bringing her pistol up. With a cry of pure rage, Greer launched herself into the guard, driving her shoulder into his back. The guard's hail of gunfire cut off abruptly, the impact knocking him off balance, slumping forward. The guard by the window finally seemed to gather his bearings. Backpedaling, trying to create space between him and the pathfinders, he shouted something and brought his rifle up. 2 shots rang out and the Pendiki jerked back just before he fired. The impact of 2 tungsten slugs knocked the guard back. He slammed into the floor-to-ceiling window, shattering the glass, and screamed as his momentum carried him out of the building into the night air outside. Greer cried out, falling to the ground, bound hands reaching for a wound in her thigh, blood already staining her jumpsuit. The final guard struggled to his knees, cursing and shouting, trying to get a hand on his rifle. Nunez was on his feet. He crossed the 2 meters between them and drove a booted foot into the alien's face, snapping his head back. The Pendiki grunted, body twisting back from the impact, then fell to the floor, unmoving. Carson got to her feet.
"Check the crew!"
she shouted over the howling winds. She knelt beside Greer, cutting her restraints with her tack knife.
"Are you okay?"
Greer groaned, rubbing her wrists where the restraints had dug into her skin.
"I'm fine."
"Where's Abindu?"
Jenna asked, stepping up behind Carson. Greer frowned.
"Who's this?"
"Jenna's with us," Carson said.
"Abindu left about 10 minutes ago to check on another set of prisoners," Greer said. "They've got another set of secure rooms 1 floor up. We passed them on the way down."
Jenna turned to leave.
"Wait," Carson said, getting to her feet.
"You can't take on Abindu by yourself."
She turned to West and Nunez.
"Get them to the Valiant."
Carson and Jenna took the stairs 2 at a time, pausing briefly at the stairwell access door. Jenna pulled the door open before Carson could stop her and moved into the corridor beyond.
"Jenna, wait!"
Carson said, following the Zeiss woman through the door. The 2 pushed down the corridor, clearing open doorways and rooms as they went. At a T-intersection, Carson grabbed Jenna's shoulder, pulling her to a stop. Jenna shrugged off Carson's hand, glaring back at her.
"We don't have time to wait," Jenna said. "Abindu will get away."
"If he gets away, he gets away,"
Carson said between breaths.
"We can't just keep..."
Movement from the corridor to her left caught Carson's eye.
"Down!"
Carson shouted, pushing Jenna aside while simultaneously bringing her rifle up. The Pendiki, not the one Carson and the Zeiss were searching for, was shirtless, and he looked like he was in the process of fastening his pants. His eyes bulged at the sight of the 2 women.
"Abindu!"
Jenna called out and fired, sending a burst almost point-blank into the alien's bare chest. The bullets knocked the Pendiki back, his skull smacking against the wall. His scream of pain was cut short as he died, collapsing to the floor.
Move!
Jenna shouted. She dropped to a knee, pulled the Pendiki's sidearm free of the holster on his hip, and continued around the corner. Two fully clothed Pendiki charged out of an open door on the left side of the hall, both pulling pistols from holsters. Jenna brought both pistols up, one in each hand, and fired without stopping. The first Pendiki screamed as a bullet caught him in the shoulder, spinning him backward through the corridor. The second doubled over, the rounds landing low in his pelvis. He collapsed into a screaming ball on the floor. Jenna never stopped moving. Carson pushed hard, staying on her heels. There was no stopping her now. They entered a long room filled with partitioned cubicles on either side of a wide aisle that ran the length of the space. As Jenna reached the first cubicle, another Pendiki emerged, wearing only shorts, and lunged for the woman. Jenna ducked, swatting away the alien's arms, spun around him, and pressed the barrel of one of her pistols into his side. She fired twice. His head erupted in a mist of blood and gore, splattering the wall behind him. Two cubicles down, a second Pendiki emerged. Carson found his face in her optics and squeezed the trigger. The alien's head snapped back as the round slammed home, knocking him off his feet.
A Bindu!
Jenna shouted, letting the first alien collapse to the floor and turning to continue down the aisle. Carson hesitated briefly as she passed the open cubicle and felt bile rise at the back of her throat when she looked inside. A Zeiss female lay on a cheap bed, her hands bound to ropes anchored into the wall above her head. Her entire body was bruised and beaten. Her eyes were wide with horror and pain. Carson gritted her teeth and continued on.
Stay to the right, Jenna, I've got—
Three cubicles down, a Pendiki wearing only pants darted out of the opening and down the aisle, sprinting away from them. He looked over his shoulder briefly as he turned a corner at the far end.
A Bindu!
Jenna shouted, sprinting after him, not bothering to clear the remaining cubicles as he disappeared around the corner. Carson followed, making sure to clear the cubicles as she charged past. As she reached the fourth opening, she heard a woman's voice shout,
Careful!
Carson slowed, clearing the opening as she approached. One eye looking through the optic, the other watching her background. Three gunshots rang out, followed by a grunt of pain and something clattering across the floor. A pistol slid out of the opening. Inside, a Zeiss male was struggling to keep his bare legs wrapped around a Pendiki, screaming as he punched at his face. Carson grabbed the alien by his long black hair and yanked back. The Pendiki grunted as Carson pulled him free of the Zeiss man's grasp. He stumbled back, swinging wildly with both hands. Carson dodged the blows and resisted the urge to send a burst of fire into the alien's naked torso. She didn't want to risk hitting the man with her rounds. She let her Gauss rifle hang and drew her tack knife. The Pendiki lunged, oblivious to the knife, reaching for Carson's throat with both hands. She batted them away while stepping to the side and brought the knife up, slamming it into the alien's sternum. The alien screamed in pain, hands grasping for the knife as Carson shoved the blade in deep. She drove her knee into the Pendiki's chest, knocking the wind from his lungs, cutting off his cries of pain. She pulled the knife free, only to slam it home again. The blade hit bone and the alien's body convulsed under the impact, arms falling limply to his side as his knees gave out. Carson pulled her blade free as the alien collapsed to the floor and looked to the Zeiss man still bound to the wall. She stepped forward and cut both ropes, then flipped the knife over, grabbing it by the blade and holding it out.
Get the others free.
The man nodded and hesitantly took the blade.
I'll be back, Carson said, then charged after Jenna.
The Zeiss woman was just pushing through a door at the far end of the room when Carson caught up to her.
He's this way!
The two women charged into a large open garage on the back side of the tower. Rows of small personal transports lined both sides of the space. Orange lines drawn on the dark gray floor marked parking stalls and drive lanes through the garage. A Bindu is racing down the right side aisle.
A Bindu, stop!
Jenna shouted. Carson fired a single shot, hitting one of the light panels that hung from the ceiling. Sparks erupted from the fixture and the light blinked out. A Bindu's hands shot into the air as he came to an abrupt stop.
Please! Don't shoot!
Turn around!
Carson shouted.
Slowly!
A Bindu turned, eyes filled with fright.
Please don't, I...
Jenna raised her pistol without a word and fired. A Bindu's head snapped back as the round slammed into his forehead. He stumbled back, arms flailing, then fell to the ground, his naked back smacking against the hard concrete.
What the hell, Jenna? He was giving up!
The Zeiss woman lowered her weapon and turned to Carson.
That thing doesn't get to just give up. He deserved no quarter or pity. He deserved to die.
Carson wanted to argue, but no words came. Jenna looked over Carson's shoulder.
Gore!
Carson turned to see the man she'd freed standing with a group of Zeiss women.
Come to take me home, Jenna, the Zeiss man said.
Yes, sure, I have.
Come on, we need to get to the ship, Carson said.
She keyed her IR.
West, where yet?
Just about to the platform, Chief.
We'll meet you there. Moretti, Birch, what's your status?
We're good, Chief, Birch said. Valiant is back under our control. Name one and we'll come get you.
Pick us up on the platform on 80. We'll be down there in 5.
Roger that.
The Valiant wobbled in the air slightly, then seemed to overcorrect, and the unfolded ramp knocked one of the air bikes clean off the ramp. Jerry grabbed the support rail by the opening, as the wind outside and his brother's flying threatened to knock him over.
Hey, easy! Greer yelled, hobbling back. Who the hell is driving my ship?
Jerry started to answer, but the pilot was already gone, sprinting for the bridge. The Valiant leveled out, holding steady a few centimeters off the platform. Jerry moved down the ramp to help some of the injured crew members. He took one man's arm around his shoulders and walked him up into the bay. Carson jogged up the ramp and put a hand on his shoulder.
You look like you've been through hell. Are you okay?
I'm fine, Jerry said. I'm worried about Popoff.
If anyone can do anything for, Moretti can.
Carson turned to Valiant's co-pilot, being helped up the ramp by Nunez. She nodded to his bandaged leg.
Can you fly with that thing?
Lincoln nodded, grimacing as he put weight on it.
No problem. Who needs a leg to fly, right? Shit.
What's your ship's name?
The Zeiss male asked, inspecting the ship's bay.
The Fartknocker,
Nunez said, waving a hand around.
The Valiant,
Carson snapped, glaring at the sergeant who gave her a sheepish look. He ran a hand over one of the rover's tires.
The accommodations seem sparse.
Sit.
Jenna told Jor, pointing to the benches. The building shook as a drop pod slammed into it somewhere above. Glass and chunks of debris rained down on the platform behind Valiant as the last of the Zeiss climbed aboard.
Might be good to have someone in the turret,
Lincoln said. Carson turned to Jerry.
Can you handle that?
Jerry felt a swelling of pride and couldn't help grinning. He nodded.
I can handle that.
Chapter 27. Streams of information, visual, audible, even physical, flowed into the tank, giving Jared the sensation that he was in 10,000 different places at once, and found the experience was overwhelming. Jared focused on closing off elements of the data that he didn't need. The new model Netherguard could manage on their own without any direct control from him. It was the sergeants and company commanders that he needed to remain connected to, and even that data was almost too much. The holotank, located in the main hangar bay of the lead assault ship, was surrounded by server stacks, cooling vessels, redundant display panels, and cables connecting the mass of technology together. The subdued orange glow of the images around him flickered off his battle armor. The recessed ceiling lights glowed at half strength, reducing the amount of outside sensory interference. The room was empty, sealed off from the rest of the ship. That lone concession had surprised Jared when he'd announced it to the Emperor. But logically, it made the most sense. You don't want to interfere with the one person controlling your invasion from beginning to end. Holographic panels of data, feeds from helmet cams, and streams of radio communication rotated around him just outside of arm's length. The orb of data surrounded him completely. Every movement he made manipulated the data in some way. Fingers flicked, sending data panels to the background. Spread hands enlarged specific feeds and thoughts opened radio connections. A drop pod exploded on a feed in front of him, the image shaking with the turbulence of re-entry. Streams of debris, fire, and smoke trailed through the sky. On a display relegated to the background, the Netherguard casualty list grew by 20. More pods exploded as a flight of Regulos fighters tore through the cluster. The planet's anti-aircraft emplacements kept up a constant barrage of fire, sending streams of tracers into the air. During the first 10 minutes of the invasion, 2 in 3 drop pods were either completely destroyed or fatally damaged before they reached 5,000 feet above ground level. He attempted to retask some of their fighters to engage the AA turrets, but his request was denied by the Archduke, without explanation. The complete waste of troops, regardless of how easy it was to replace them, made no sense. Why not plan a strategy that didn't involve the loss of almost 60% of your forces? He had to keep reminding himself, the part of himself he kept hidden from the triumvirate, that he didn't care about how many Netherguard were lost. It was that many more soldiers that his people wouldn't have to face when the triumvirate moved on to Terra Nova. But another part of him, a part he wished would remain quiet, felt regret at sending so many warriors to their death, without even a shred of hope for surviving. The Netherguard were the very definition of meat for the grinder. Two full companies advanced through the spaceport, the first location on his priority target list. Several squads armed with shoulder-mounted rockets destroyed ship after ship as they worked their way through the massive complex. Several transports took hits as they lifted off, crashing down into the tarmac in brilliant fireballs. Explosions sent debris and flames into nearby craft, damaging still more ships. Several bands of resistance attempted to repel the Netherguard, but were quickly quelled. Jared saw the flanking maneuver from the air as another flight of drop pods descended on the spaceport and redirected three squads to intercept. It took almost 5 minutes for the Regulos to deploy their ground defense forces. Battle droids emerged from underground storehouses and bunkers, moved to engage the Netherguard throughout the city. Jared recognized the action of a cautious commander, waiting to see where the Netherguard would be committed to before launching a counterattack. The droids weren't well equipped. Though their weapons could drop a Netherguard with a single well-placed shot, their rate of fire was too slow. A droid might get off a shot and then be overwhelmed before it could fire again. The math seemed to be working in Jared's favor, until he realized that the stream of battle droids wasn't stemming and their numbers were steadily growing. A squadron of Ultari fighters swooped down across the spaceport, raking the tarmac with cannon fire. Several ships, whose transponder information identified them as Barathi, Lincini, and several others, lifted away from the spaceport, immediately making for orbit. He established a link to the nearest Netherguard unit.
NG-198-H23, shift fire to cut off the escaping ships in Sector 26.
By your will, Battle Commander,
the Netherguard responded. Jared watched as the company charged deeper into the spaceport, bringing a maelstrom of fire with them. An alert chime sounded and a panel filled with Prince Zvira's face.
Why is 9th Company diverging from their established protocols?
There's several vessels escaping the perimeter around the spaceport, Master.
The spaceport is not priority, Herald. Your only priority is the destruction of the Abomination's units and the area surrounding the primary target. You will not deviate from established protocol, do you understand?
Yes, Master.
Reassign those units to their original route immediately.
The panel vanished, and with a flick of his finger, a top-down map of the city appeared. Dinosaure proper stretched for hundreds of miles, but the core was only about 20 miles wide. A building near the center flashed red, arrows indicating potential landing zones. Using arm and hand commands, Jared redirected 9th Company to the target, joining some 2,000 other Netherguard converging on the Din Governance building. As his battle lines advanced, they received fire from a force three times greater, taking losses in numbers that he would have never accepted while he commanded Doughboys. He watched the battle for several minutes, that hidden part of himself hoping the droids would push the Triumvirate's forces back. They put up a decent defense, but despite their superior numbers, the battle droids were outgunned. Jared couldn't help but wonder how an artificial intelligence as vast and powerful as the SI could allow something like this to happen. The level of technology needed to create a viable AI should have been able to mount a significant defense against their attack, especially one as clumsy as the Prince's. Another alert panel appeared, the holotank's secondary routines bringing what it thought was important information to Jared's attention. Elements of 31st Company had encountered heavy pockets of resistance in Sector 871. It looked like several platoons had been separated near one of the city's commercial districts, engaging battle droids and armed civilians. Three platoons of battle droids were moving to engage from the far end. Din Governance was the more important target now.
I'll come back to it, Jared thought, raising his hand to dismiss the visual feed. Then froze.
A ship rose up from one of the tall towers, moving fast. It wasn't Ultari or Regulos. He zoomed in, and his breath caught in his chest as he recognized the Terran military markings on the hull.
Ken, what the hell are you doing here?
Jared asked silently. He watched it climb, evading attacks from Ultari fighters, none of which were actually focused on bringing it down. Many broke off to engage the remaining Regulos fighters. As it broke atmosphere, Jared said a silent prayer, willing the ship to get away. But instead of immediately breaking for warp, it continued to fly away from the planet.
What are you doing? Jared wanted to shout at them.
Get the hell out of here!
Fingers danced and flicked across the display, bringing up information from the rest of the Triumvirate fleet. He'd been so focused on the ground assault he hadn't thought to see what the battle fleet in orbit was doing. The Altari captains had managed a fleet of 30 warships, including 2 fighter carriers, plus over 100 troop transport ships. They'd sat in high orbit, anchored a few thousand kilometers off the now-destroyed SI space station. Compared to the Altari fortress, the SI station had been unimpressive, but compared to anything humanity had ever built, the thing was still enormous. Fragments as big as frigates spun lazily through the void in an ever-expanding cloud of debris. Hundreds, perhaps thousands of ships were rising up from the surface, but none of them were jumping away. Jared turned, working the tank's controls. One of the warships was emitting a localized warp inhibitor. No one was going anywhere. A data panel appeared, giving him the pertinent information to the field, and something caught his eye. The holotank required huge amounts of computing power and sensor information to operate and give Jared effective control over thousands of ground assault troops. But to facilitate that amount of raw data, the tank was tied into the fleet's local network, giving him access to almost every communication and sensor node the Altari had available. He selected one of the smaller transports, one which had taken damage in the initial assault, and tapped into one of its communication nodes. He segregated it off from the rest of the ship by tricking the local computers to think the node had been damaged during the battle and secured it from the rest of the network.
I hope this works, Jared thought, activating the node.
Chapter 28. The railgun continued to thump as they lifted into the air. Carson and West reached the cockpit and had to shield their eyes as something exploded 100 meters off their bow. 2 Nether Guard fighters zipped through the dissipating fireball, turning their cannons on their next target, a small shuttle lifting off from a raised landing pad.
"Get us the hell out of here," Carson said.
"You don't have to tell me twice,"
Greer said. Carson held onto the back of the chair as the ship sped forward. Several fighters broke formation from a passing wave, opening up with their energy cannons. Valiant shields flared blue-white. Carson tapped her throat mic.
"Jerry!"
"I see him!"
West shot her a confused look.
"The Hale boys in the turret?"
One of the Nether Guard fighters exploded, its wing shearing off and slamming into its wingman. The second fighter flipped over and plummeted to the ground, smoke and flame pouring from the wound on its side. Greer banked the ship around a cluster of tall towers, coming up behind another group of fighters. The turret thumped and all 4 fighters exploded in turn.
"He's good," West said. "Don't tell him that," Carson said. "He's a big enough pain in my ass already without getting a big head."
The view shifted upward as Greer angled them away from the city, flying hard for space. The glow of the planet faded beneath them, and they reached orbit several minutes later. The massive space station came into view, the behemoth venting atmosphere from hundreds of fractures across its surface. Several of the docking rings had broken away from the main structure and were slowly descending toward the planet below. Space was littered with dead ships, large haulers that had been torn apart, shuttles twirled through the void, transports exploded and blew apart. Altari fighters zipped in and out of the wreckage, searching for new targets.
"They never had a chance," West said.
A warning chimed as message panels flashed to life on Greer's console.
"Oh, shit," she said. "They've got capital ships."
Several holographic ships appeared, miniature models of the larger vessels in high Dinosauri orbit. Lines pointing to offensive hardpoints appeared as Valiant's computer digested the data from her sensors.
"Get us out of here, Greer," Carson said.
"They're armed to the teeth," Lincoln said, zooming in on one of them. "I read at least 20 energy turret batteries on that one."
"I'm having trouble locking in coordinates for Terra Nova. Something's fouling the hyperspace calculations," Greer said. "Whatever's causing the disruption, it's coming from those capital ships."
"Jamming?"
West asked. Greer nodded, fingers dancing furiously over her console.
"Definitely a disruption field. I'm not finding a way through it."
"Plot us a high-speed course away from the Altari and punch it with everything you've got."
One of the Zeiss appeared behind West, craning around him to see what the humans were looking at.
"Those are Altari ships,"
Jenna said. Carson turned to her.
"You sound surprised."
"More than one clan, I can tell by the markings,"
the Zeiss said.
"They never work together. They hate each other almost as much as they hate the Regulos. How is this possible?
Hard to say what the Triumvirate wants, Carson said.
Jenna looked at her, eyes wide.
What did you say?
Chief, Greer said, looking over her shoulder. We're getting a tight beam transmission from one of the Altari ships. Carson and West exchanged a look.
Put it through.
The image of Jared Hale's head and shoulders flickered into existence above the center console. He was wearing some kind of battle armor, though the face shield on his helmet was up.
What the hell do you want? Carson asked.